supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later, a great new weapon in the war against mosquitoes. And this isn't something they're doing in a lab that you hope they're going to release in your neighborhood 20 years from now. This is something you can do next week to cut down the number of mosquitoes that'll bite you all summer long. So make sure you stay tuned to the question of the week. In the meantime, we'll entertain you with a heaping helping of your fascinating phone call questions, comments, tips, tricks, etc. at 1-888-346-9499. John, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, how are you? I'm a big fan. I was waiting for a question that I could finally call in and ask.
Well, I'm glad to hear from you, John. Where are you?
Norwalk, Connecticut.
Okay, very good. And what is the question that you've finally come up with?
God willing, in 2 days, I'll be a new homeowner. So
good for you. Good for you. Mazel tov, man.
Thank you. There's a lot of new pressures to take on and a lot of new joys to uncover. While I was at the previous owner's moving sale, we figured out that she had a fig tree in the backyard. Not quite sure what kind of fig tree it is. She said she brought it over from Italy, and I guess from all the moving stresses and the new life changes that she's going through, she didn't have a chance to cover it. And she said that she always does, and it always is done well when she's covered it, but not quite sure what's going to happen this year.
Okay.
So
what does it look like?
It looks like a normal dormant tree. There's still the buds on there that I guess it set out last
fall. Okay, good. As you already realize, there's a ton of stuff you're going to have to do inside that house to get it ready for you. So don't go nuts with the outside, other than if there is no vegetable garden and you want to establish one, I urge you to go to like a home store and get one of these great raised bed kits that they have these days, where you can put up a couple of 4x4 or 4x8 raised beds and just have a couple of pop-up vegetable gardens, get rid of a small amount of lawn. But for the rest of the landscape, I urge people to go through a full season, see what kind of spring bulbs come up, see which of these kind of nebulous-looking shrubs turns out to be a fabulous spring or summer bloomer. And then by the time we get to the fall, and hopefully you're a little caught up, that's a great time to do planting. That's a great time to put in a couple of things of your own, because the survival rate, first of all, for fall-planted trees and shrubs is so much bigger than in spring. And the prices tend to be lower and the plants tend to be bigger. Now, it's unfortunate in Connecticut, which is northern, that the fig tree wasn't wrapped last year, but I guarantee it's not fatal. Figs are funny. Figs are Mediterranean plants. And if exposed directly to a cold northern winter, they can suffer almost complete dieback of their above ground parts. But if we think about that, the same is true of virtually all our herbaceous perennials. Things like hostas and peonies and the above-ground parts of hydrangeas. I mean, we lose almost all to half of those things over winter, and yet the plants come back from the root system. And that's exactly what happens with figs. Unless somebody has done something really, really foolish, figs will always return from their roots. Now, if they're in a really cold climate and they got really brutalized over winter, they may have suffered so much above ground loss that they can't develop enough biomass to get to fruiting.
Mm-hmm.
But they will survive, come back, and be green. So no matter what, you'll notice when you see new growth coming from your fig. Give it a couple of weeks after that new growth starts to begin, and then you'll be able to identify which parts of the tree were winter killed. when you can identify that, I want you to cut them off, cutting into healthy tissue. That'll stimulate more growth. If you're lucky, it's in a protected location. She said it came over from Italy, which means it already has like a 10% veteran's preference in terms of being able to produce figs. So just bear with it, and you might get figs this summer. You might not, but no matter what, you will then, at the end of the season, you will not prune it back. You won't touch it in the late summer or fall, other than to pick any figs you get, of course. But you will drive some stakes into the ground, and you will surround those stakes with burlap. And you might even throw burlap over the top if it's not that tall. But you don't want to wrap it in plastic or anything that doesn't breathe. Just break the wind, give it a little bit of protection from the cold, and then the following spring you do the same thing. You examine it carefully. Much less of the plant will have been winter killed. So then you cut off that little bit of winter killed damage. That summer you're going to get figs.
Okay.
All right. So it's all good news about your fig tree. Maybe this summer, maybe next summer, but you're going to be eating figs.
Excellent.
All right, John?
I look forward to it.
All right. You take care, man.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Caitlin, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi there. How are you?
I am fine, Caitlin. How are you?
I'm great. I enjoy listening to you. You're quite a character.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And where is Caitlin?
Caitlin is in the Traverse City area.
Up in Michigan?
Yes.
Okay, very good. I like that name. You may be our first Caitlin in 14 years. I can't recall having had one before on the show.
Well, believe it or not, it's spelled L-A-N-D, and I gave myself that name as a garden gnome.
Oh, really? Okay. So, But Michigan is kind of cold to be standing outside with a little pointy hat on, in the front of your yard.
Today you have to hold it on. 30-plus mile-an-hour winds up here, yeah. Yep, but it won't be long. We're going to have spring, and actually everything that you're doing is so appropriate so everyone can be prepared.
Why, thank you. So what does Caitlin wish to be prepared for this spring?
Well, actually, I'm a gardener, not just for myself but for others, and I do the work myself, design, install, and maintain, and plus I teach if someone wants to work with me. But the question is this. You had mentioned in your last program, or you were speaking of chickens and raising chickens and all, do you have to have a rooster to produce eggs?
No. Eggs are produced no matter what. What you get with a rooster is you get fertile eggs, eggs that have the capacity to become chickens if properly incubated. But mostly there are people, most famously John Lennon, who preferred fertile eggs to the normal kind, just eating them for breakfast. Every once in a while in the real super powerful hippy-dippy markets, you'll not only see cage-free, free-roaming, pasture-raised chickens, organic eggs, but you will sometimes see fertile eggs. So there is a market for this, and people do like them.
Okay, now here's the other question.
No, wait a minute. There's two other things about roosters, which is if mice or rats or a hawk or a raccoon or a weasel or anything like that gets in there, the rooster will fight it off. That's the main reason anybody who has a rooster keeps a rooster, because the third thing is they are alarm clocks. They will wake you up, or they will, you know, call out at dawn every morning, which is why you don't want roosters in urban areas. But that's probably a way that they have of warning predators not to even come and try.
I see. Well, that's very good to know. Good point. And I wasn't aware of it. I need to know where to get feed for chickens that is not GMO corn.
The vast majority of corn and soybeans grown in the United States is genetically modified, over 90% of the crop. And that's the advantage. That's the difference between antibiotic-free chicken eggs and organic chicken eggs, is the organic ones were raised on organic feed. So the organic feed is available. It's out there. It's raised by organic farmers. Or this coming summer, if you're going to be doing this, you might want to find a place to grow a big area of your own field corn and crack it and use it for feed over the wintertime.
Yeah, but it's not already genetically modified corn kernel.
You personally, as a human, can't buy genetically modified seed. You got to be a farmer. So it's very easy to find normal corn seed, but in the market, you know, unless it says otherwise, corn chips or taco shells or anything made from corn is probably genetically modified unless it's organic. All right, so, Caitlin, it's either buy organic feed or grow your own. The good news is that it's very easy for you to buy normal seed of open pollinated or even hybrid corns and soybeans and grow them naturally. So I would urge you to be organic all the way, either buy the organic feed or grow it yourself, and your chickens will be happier. They will have a brighter glow in their eyes. Okay?
Yes, thank you.
All right, thank
Very
you.
Very good. I appreciate it.
Good luck. Bye-bye.
Good luck. You too.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind everybody that spring is our busiest time here at YBYG. I'm traveling around the country for speaking engagements while trying to start my own seeds, prune my fruit trees, and, oh yeah, do this show. So before you email us with a question that might take us a while to get to this time of year, check the Garden Answers A to Z section at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Odds are your answer has been waiting there, just waiting for you to show up. But don't go clicking on those letters just yet, because we'll be right back with lots more of your fascinating phone calls and finally a way for you to strike back at mosquitoes. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Mosquito-Free Garden.
Burpee supports You Bet Your Garden and offers over 80 new varieties for the 2013 growing season, including Super Sauce, a 2-pound sauce tomato, and On Deck, a sweet corn you can grow in a container. These and more can be seen online at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, we have a new plan. No longer will we slather ourselves with repellents or just spray garlic oil on our yard to try to keep mosquitoes at bay. We can stop them before they breed to large numbers. And I want everybody to follow this simple plan that we're going to outline in the question of the week, which we'll get to after lots more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Beverly, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you. I live near Summertown, Tennessee, which is about an hour and a half southwest of Nashville.
Okay, very good.
And I have three plum trees that I judge to be about 10 to 12 years old that my extension office, which has been just wonderful and attentive and helpful, has identified the disease that these trees have as black knot.
Okay, black knot, not black rot.
No, K-N, yeah.
Yeah,
right,
I got you. I got you. Okay, so you didn't plant these trees. You inherited them.
No, these trees came with the property. They were on the property.
And how long have you been there?
I've been here for 6 years.
And have you been pruning them every year?
I have not been pruning them every year. I am a fairly new gardener. I've been gardening for 3 years, and I have not tended to the fruit trees as I should have, and I've only just been starting to study about fruit trees a bit and listening to you about them. And what I have found out is that I probably should have caught this last fall. I should have seen it. I should have noticed it, and I didn't.
I wouldn't. No, no, no. Don't worry about that. What you should have been doing is pruning them every year. So,
yes.
You know, when the trees begin to blossom, which will be soon for you guys in Nashville.
Yes.
You know, make sure you get a good pair of pruners, a good pair of pruners and a good pair of lopers. If you don't have good equipment, there's a good time to buy them so they're nice and sharp. And then don't follow any stupid advice about bleach or sterilizing. What you want to do is go out there and look at the trees, because you can see where these warty, black, knotty lesions exist, right?
Yes. Yes.
You want to go out there with a big trash can. You want to cut below those into green, healthy wood. You want to take off all the diseased parts. Don't even let them hit the ground. Get them right into a trash bag or a trash can. And take off anything that's diseased. And again, only cutting into green, healthy wood, you don't get any disease on your pruners. You can't spread any disease. And then I want you, even though you say it's clean, I want you to rake the orchard floor just to placate me. This disease does carry over in infected twigs and plant parts. So it's very important to be as tenacious here as possible. And then I want you to mulch all of the trees with an inch of high-quality yard waste compost. No wood and no fertilizer.
I've already done that.
Which?
Mulching with compost.
Oh, okay. Excellent. Well, then I would say, because you're aware that this can't be done with surgical precision, have a tarp underneath you at each tree to catch anything you drop. When did you put the compost down?
I put it in last fall.
Okay. You know, I wouldn't be afraid to freshen it up again. There might be some spores, although spores are not going to germinate real well in compost.
Okay.
If you are good at this, if you do a good job taking your time, just doing one tree a day, because this takes some time and dedication, and you get off all the infected wood, it could be over. And if you see that even after you remove all the nasty stuff, the black stuff, that the trees still look a little crowded, well, then don't be afraid just to do some pruning for air circulation. The more air that circulates through the trees, the more sunlight that reaches the center of the trees, the less this disease will have a chance to come back. Now, there are organic sprays. I mean, organic sprays, these things are ancient. The sprays for this would go back to Roman times. They would be a Bordeaux mix and a lime sulfur mix and things like that. But let's just see if paying attention for one spring with the compost and getting out all the diseased wood, I wouldn't be surprised if that didn't take care of 90% of it. And then during the growing season, if you see a twig going bad, just cut it off right away. And again, always cutting into healthy, clean wood.
Right. Okay. I was told, there are two steps. These people got this information from me from the University of Tennessee.
Right.
And the first thing they said to do is what you just said to the next step after pruning is before the bud swells, which is right now, a spray with lime sulfur. But then after that, at the bud swell, again at early bloom, again at full bloom, and the fourth time, two to 3 weeks later, that I should spray with Cleary's 3336F or Domaine FL.
Right, and that would be the last thing you would spray with, because it would sicken you unto death. One of the problems with university extension services is these land-grant universities were originally funded with proceeds from pesticide and fertilizer sales, and they were really compelled to recommend these chemicals in the early days. And that kind of philosophy, that corrupted culture, continues. Yeah. Some state extension services have gotten very hip. This one sounds the opposite of hip. Do your pruning. If you want to use lime sulfur, that's an ancient remedy, a little spray after you're done pruning. That's fine. But I am a strong believer in cultural controls. Good pruning for airflow, compost at the bottom. You don't want to be spraying Captan or any of those other fungicides. They are some of the most dangerous chemicals allowed for homeowner use today.
Well, I'm so glad I called you because these things were making me nervous just because they sound terrible. And I thought, I don't think I want to do this unless you tell me it's okay.
I expect you're going to have tremendous results just from a good dedicated pruning.
Okay, I'll do it. Thank you so very much.
My pleasure, Bev. Thanks for calling.
Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Jonathan, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Jonathan. How are you?
Good.
Where is Jonathan good?
I'm good in Blackwood, New Jersey.
Okay. What can we do for Jonathan in New Jersey?
I have a question which is in regards to pruning, and it's for two separate items.
Okay. Item number one.
The item number one is I have a butterfly bush that's about 3 years old.
Right.
And I thinned it out in the interior of the plant last year.
Right.
And it's grown to about 6-7 feet tall. Now, my question is, I want to keep it growing healthy and blooming profusely. So I was going to do this year is just kind of trim it back a little bit and thin it out a little bit again. Would you recommend I do that, or should I leave the plant the way it is?
A butterfly bush is one of these plants that really benefits from an annual haircut every spring. And you have had a very light hand with this plant. Now, I presume you've gotten lots of blooms and lots of butterflies and insects?
Yes.
Okay, good. In the spring, you wait till it starts growing again, and then you wait like another week for the weather to warm up a bit more, and then you can cut it back to like 2 feet off the ground, and it will regrow that biomass very quickly, and that's about the recommended level of pruning for you to get the maximum number of blooms, because you get winter dieback on this plant anyway, and you want to get rid of all the old bad stuff. But this isn't like a rose where you want to carefully prune and, you know, take out the center and keep things from being crowded. This is something you want to take back to 2 feet all around, and you'll actually get a better result than if you had left it alone. This is one of those kind of plants that doesn't really bloom well unless it gets a spring haircut. See, pruning stimulates growth, especially on certain plants like this one, and you are guaranteed to get more blooms from a plant that you prune back pretty good than from one you leave alone. And I would add, in my personal opinion, you'll get more blooms from a plant that you don't feed.
Okay, that settles that first argument.
And number two.
I have a gardenia bush out front, and last year did amazingly well. And again, I did the same thing. I thinned out the interior of the plant because it was getting
a little too bushy. Now, I'm going to stop you right here because gardenias are not winter hardy in our area. A gardenia would be a plant, a house plant, that you would take out for the summer and bring in the winter.
Well, it's been there, I'd say, about 4 years now.
Right, but I'm telling you, I don't know what it is, but I know it's not a gardenia, unless you've suddenly moved from New Jersey to San Diego.
Well, the plant was bought from down south. It is a gardenia. It has the flowers like a gardenia. It smells like a gardenia. And I'm assuming it is. It's been doing wonderful.
Huh.
I mean, this year I put a little fencing around it and packed it with leaves. For the wintertime, and covered with a cage over top of it so the snow wouldn't crush it.
If you somehow have this super hardy gardenia that's surviving your winters, God bless you. What I would do in the future winters is treat it like a fig tree. rather than put it in a cage filled with leaves, which seems instinctually right. But you know what happens is mice can get in there and they can eat away at the bark. What I would suggest is you just make a windbreak, drive some stakes into the ground around it and wrap burlap around the stakes. If somehow this is a gardenia that is surviving your New Jersey winters, God bless you. We do want pictures of it in flower. And what I would suggest is the same thing for figs, which is now you're going to wait till like 2 weeks after the plant begins new growth in the spring. And then you're going to cut away any winter damaged parts, because you got to have winter damage on this thing if it's even close to being a gardenia. And then anything, yes, treat it like a rose. Make sure there's good airflow around it. Make sure it gets morning sun. But the most important thing is to trim away any areas that were winter killed about 3 weeks after it starts growing again.
Okay. Thank you very much for your advice.
All right, Jonathan. Thank you. Take care, man.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Justine, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I am just fine today. Justine, how are you doing?
I'm great, but I have a big-time landscaping dilemma.
Okay. Where is Justine's landscape?
I'm in Pleasant Hill, Ohio. It's pretty close to Dayton.
Okay, very good. Rabid listeners in the Dayton area. We are thrilled to be on the air there. What can we do for Justine near Dayton?
Well, I just built a brand-new house this summer. And this is kind of my opportunity this spring to start getting some trees in my landscape and also some shrubs and things like that. So I've got a lot of work to do. But my dilemma is that I'm looking for some evergreen trees to plant in the back area of my lawn where I have neighbors and I would like to get some privacy. And so this area is pretty wet most of the time. When it rains, water sit there for a couple of days.
It's
not that it's going to sit directly in the area where I want to plant trees.
But it
does get little puddles around that area.
People have misconceptions. So, they think that there are trees that can magically transport vast quantities of water to another dimension, more water than they could hold in their biomass.
I just want trees that can survive it.
There are a very few that will, but they are not good screening trees.
They're not.
No, okay. They're...
I have some river birch planted back there, and I know they're really nice, but you're right, they're not screen trees. I want something that will stay green all year long and, you know, survive the most of extreme conditions. It gets very dry in the summer, and you know, I'll keep them watered, but it's the sitting water that is my concern.
Yes, and that sitting water is a problem that must be remedied.
You're thinking I have to fix that before I plant anything because nothing's going to do well.
Unless you want to get West Nile virus too, you know.
I'd prefer not to.
Because that area that's staying wet back there is going to be a mosquito breeding menace. So what you should have done last fall, if you had the option, if you like installed a lawn or anything, is that area should have either had drain tiles installed, which is a very simple...
My husband and I have considered putting those in this year.
Yeah, I think you probably should, and the sooner the better. The other option would have been to have the land regraded and turned into a rain garden, which is where the water is directed into a series of areas, ending in kind of a bog, a small bog where the plants are very used to growing in water but can also survive dry times. So go to our website. Go to youbetyourgarden.org, go to Garden Answers A to Z, and click under R for rain gardens. And just read the article, see if that appeals to you, and there'll be click-throughs to various university extension sites where you'll see lots of illustrations of how this is done. And rain gardens tend to be very lively, attract a lot of birds, butterflies, hummingbirds, frogs, toads. Once you have normal drainage back there, you can plant what you want. And when these privacy issues arise, evergreens, you really need to not plant them in a straight line for screening. You need to stagger them so that it looks good and you're also prepared for a death in the family. I greatly prefer ornamental grasses. Once you get the drainage issue established, you can put in ornamental grasses. They will grow at any time of the year. They put on a lot of biomass really fast. They do go dormant over the winter, but they keep their biomass. They keep their size. But from,
I think that might be a good option. I'm a little concerned that they won't be tall enough. I think whatever we plant has to be about 10 feet tall.
That's fine. When you get the yard regraded, which you're going to do for drain tiles or the rain garden, elevate that area a little bit. Buy yourself an extra foot. And then, yes, the tallest specimens of well-behaved ornamental grass will do that for you.
Okay. If I was going to plant evergreens, do you have any recommendations?
The big ones that are used are arborvitae or Leyland cypress, you know, the tall columnular,
yes.
You know. They're fast growing, but nothing grows as fast as you want it to in that situation. And they're fairly prone to damage in heavy snow and ice storms.
Right.
The longer it takes a plant to grow, the stronger a plant it is, and the longer it'll last. Fast-growing plants are very prone to storm damage, and they tend to be short-lived. All right, Justine?
Okay. Thanks for your help.
All right. Good luck, Justine.
Thanks. Goodbye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and warn those who'd like to see me in person that I'll appear at the Radnor Memorial Library in Wayne, PA on Wednesday, April 3rd, at the Delaware Home Show in Dover, April 6th and 7th, at the Fishing Creek Herb Guild in Bloomsburg, PA on Thursday, April 18th, and at the Community Home Show in Ocean Pines, Maryland on Saturday, April 27th. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we're going to be right back at you with a couple more of your fascinating phone calls and what you've been waiting for. Finally, a way to fight back against blood-sucking mosquitoes this summer. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
Burpee supports You Bet Your Garden and offers over 80 new varieties for the 2013 growing season, including Super Sauce, a 2-pound sauce tomato, and On Deck, a sweet corn you can grow in a container. These and more can be seen online at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to the question of the week, maybe the most important one you'll have heard all year. Beyond repellents, beyond yard sprays, beyond big fans blowing behind you, we have come up with a way to trap and destroy mosquitoes at the very beginning of their breeding season so that you will have a slap-free summer. You won't want to miss it, and you won't. It's coming up right after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Kay, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
No. Hi, Mike. Thank you for taking my call.
Well, thank you for making it, Kay. Where are you?
I'm in Frederick, Maryland.
I know where that is, just outside of our nation's capital.
Exactly. On your way up to Camp David.
Well, on your way up to Camp David, my invitation keeps getting lost in the mail.
Oh, well, that'll happen.
What can we do for Kay in Maryland?
Okay, well, here's my thing, Mike. In the fall, we had our lawn backyard redone with some hardscaping, and the contractor dug it all up and reseeded with seed, and he put down straw.
Okay.
And he said, you know, water it and put, keep the straw in. So now I'm wondering, like, when do I rake the straw up? I have my little baby grass coming through. And I don't want to hurt it, but yet I didn't think that straw was biodegradable, and I thought I had to do something with it. So that's what I'm wondering. And then my second part is, when I rake the straw up, is there anything I can do with it other than possibly give it to my son who has chickens?
Ooh, there's no better use. Your instincts are perfectly correct. I do not endorse these straw mulches over top of new seed beds. I don't think they do a darn thing for the grass. And they, you know, as you see, they make a bloody mess afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
It would eventually degrade, but, it's going to look like you got a lot of thatch in your lawn. You're going to see a lot of brown.
Uh-huh.
Now, have you examined this straw that they put on top carefully? Can you say for sure if it is just thin, hollow tubes, or are there any seed heads out there?
You know what? There, I did notice, because I did start to rake some of it up.
Right.
And actually, I'll tell you what we were doing with it. We had a fire pit put in as part of the landscape, and we were actually burning some of it.
Okay.
And I did notice that, yes, it's hollow, and but then there were some that I almost, coming from the Midwest, being a farm girl, almost to me kind of looked like it might be hay or something in
yes.
there.
Yes. Yeah, see,
a little,
that's...
But not a lot of it, Mike, but a little
good.
Bit.
That's the problem with, quote, straw. Even when they're careful to harvest, you know, because straw is what's left after they harvest grain for processing, it's hard to get everything. So
sure.
You'll want to be careful, and if you see any rogue tall plants coming up, that's a seed head germinating. What I would
okay.
suggest, because you are absolutely correct, a rake is going to do damage to your grass. What I would suggest to you is you go to one of these tool rental places and rent a yard vac, something you can
oh.
actually vacuum the lawn with to get most
okay.
of this stuff up without any kind of raking. Or the corollary
okay.
is go and buy a really good powered leaf blower that has
okay.
a reverse attachment and a collection bag, and blow as much of the straw as you can to loosen it up, and then use the other attachment to suck it up and
oh, okay.
get it off your lawn that way. But if you follow what I'm saying, we are avoiding raking.
Mm-hmm.
Who cuts your lawn?
We do. My husband does.
Do you have a mulching mower by any chance, or does he bag the
yes,
clipping?
Yes, it is a mulching mower, but we don't collect it. We just let it sit on the ground.
That's all good. I think you should try to get the bulk of it up as much as you can with a vacuum or a blower. And then when the lawn gets to be 3.5 inches high, he should
mm-hmm.
go over it with the mulching mower, just cutting the top half of an inch off so that it's 3 inches high. And the combination of the little bit of straw that's left and the nitrogen-rich clippings falling back to the soil line, they will help get rid of the straw. The spent clippings falling back with the tiny little shredded particles of straw will help the straw degrade, and it'll actually feed your lawn.
Oh, okay.
So get the most up that you can with a blower vac, and then mulch the rest into your grass. You may notice a little bit of what looks like thatch up until midsummer, but after that, it's going to be completely degraded and become part of the soil web down there. Because we don't know what this guy did to prevent weeds, I would suggest you give it a feeding of corn gluten meal pretty soon now. And then don't feed it over the summer, whatever you do. And then give
okay.
it a nice feeding in the fall.
Okay. All right, good.
Yes, all right, well, thank you, Kay.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
You too.
All right, bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Claire, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello, Mike.
Hello, Claire. How are you?
I am great, thank you.
And where is Claire great?
My husband and I are located in Rydal, Pennsylvania.
Okay, a nice little suburban community just outside of Philadelphia.
That is correct. My problem, Mike, is related to wild strawberry. It has literally taken over a good portion of my backyard. And honestly, up until the last year before we had a dog, I did not mind so much because my husband and I have had an organic garden for 9 years. We have not put any pesticides down. We mulch. We do all the good stuff.
Yeah.
Problem with the wild strawberry, Mike, it has literally taken over, even with seeding our grass in the fall. It has just taken over all of our grass. And what happens now is with the dog kind of being creating a traffic area back there, it's become a little bit muddy and a little bit messy on our deck.
These are two separate problems.
Okay.
Wild strawberry, if you're talking about the plant that I think is a very long, skinny vine. It's 99% vine, and then every once in a while it gets bored and it produces a little rosette of
exactly.
leaves with something that looks almost like it could be a strawberry in the center, but it's inedible. It's a running vine. It's very shallow rooted. It does not root that often. It was sold and used in this country for decades as an ornamental ground cover, which is why it's around, and it really does best as such, just covering bare areas where there's not a lot of foot traffic. Now, wild strawberry will never infest a lawn that's properly cared for. Do you cut and feed the lawn yourself?
We do, yes. We do cut. We cut the lawn. We leave it like extra long in the summer so that it develops good
okay.
roots.
No,
when we do
no.
water it.
No, okay. No. Well, I presume it's a cool season lawn. It's either fescue or bluegrass, right?
Yes.
It should be 3 inches after you cut it. Not long, not short. The right height. It should be
okay.
3 inches after you cut it. That's the exact right height for the grass to develop a deep root system. Do you give it a little feeding in the spring and a bigger feeding in the fall?
My husband does, yes.
Okay, but he doesn't feed it over the summer?
No.
Okay, and how do you water?
If we do water, it's for, you know, up to an inch and we'll measure it.
Oh, okay, very good, very good. And you're watering in the morning?
Yes, we always okay. water it where it will not evaporate.
Well, then, I'm first of all shocked that the wild strawberry is affecting your lawn. And I can only guess that your grass is fescue, a clumping grass, that your dog is doing this much damage.
Yes, I believe it is.
Yeah. So you with and it's a big dog, I'm guessing.
It is.
Yeah. You got to try to keep the dog off the lawn when the lawn is soaking wet. See, fescue, being a clumping grass, doesn't develop the sideways runners that bluegrass does. Although bluegrass is a hungrier grass, a thirstier grass, a grass that grows faster, it's a much tougher grass that fills in its own bare spots. Once Rover cuts a little lane in fescue, that lane is going to stay there until you can reseed it in late August. So it's very important to keep the grass at the correct height, to keep him off it as much as possible when the ground is soaking wet. That's when you get the most grass up. And try to establish different runs so that the dog isn't making a rut over and over again. Now, with the wild strawberry, what I would suggest is just have a pulling party when the ground is soaking wet. This stuff comes up out of the ground very easily. It doesn't have any kind of tenacious root system whatsoever. Herbicides are not effective against this plant, chemical or organic, because if you look at it, you'll see there is no plant. There's really nothing for the herbicides to stick to. So have a pulling party in the spring when it's weakest, when the soil is soaking wet. You'll be done in a couple of hours. You know, have a couple of cases of beer or do a barbecue. Everybody has to pull a bag of wild strawberry. And then drive in deep edging to keep it from coming back in again. And it really should not return. It is not a pernicious weed. It is not a weed that's difficult to control.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much.
All right. Good luck, Claire.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
All right. As promised, it's time for the question of the week Breeding Traps, a new way to fight mosquitoes. Alexis Landis, You Bet Your Garden producer, please read us this week's question.
Thanks, Mike. We heard from Amy in Ambler, Pennsylvania, who writes, I live in a row house with a small yard and raised bed vegetable garden that were completely overrun by Asian tiger mosquitoes last summer. And I expect it to be just as bad, if not worse, this year. I am one of those people mosquitoes seem to love, and they attack me the minute I set foot in the yard. Even when I wear pants, long sleeves, and a high concentration of DEET, or Skin So Soft, I still get bit. And in broad daylight by these Asian tiger buggers. The solutions I see online all involve putting stuff in the water where they lay their eggs, but we make sure not to have any standing water on our property. Is there any way to combat these mosquitoes when you can't find their water source? If I garlic spray my yard, will they let me garden in peace? I'd also love to be able to sit on our deck and enjoy a nice glass of wine without being overpowered by the scent of bug repellent. Any suggestions would be greatly appreciated.
Well, I'm not surprised that the chemical repellent DEET didn't protect you. Chris River, one of our great volunteer researchers, just sent me an article from a peer-reviewed journal revealing that mosquitoes are quickly becoming resistant to DEET after their first exposure. That research, performed by Dr. James Logan from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, was published just last month. And even if it was effective, I'd still think it was madness to use DEET. DEET is a potent nerve toxin. You absorb it through your skin, and it exits your body via your liver and kidneys. If you want to use a repellent, there are several non-toxic natural products that have been proven to be as effective as DEET in controlled medical studies. That's the dreaded arm placed into the box of hungry female mosquitoes. The brand names and study citations are listed in our many previous questions of the week on mosquitoes, as are the details on using herbs that also have a high degree of mosquito repellency, like catnip and lemon thyme. And Dr. Logan's groundbreaking new research leads me to add a new suggestion, that you rotate a number of different natural repellents so that mosquitoes don't develop resistance after repeated exposure the way they have with DEET. Oh, and Avon Skin So Soft is not something I'd suggest in the rotation. I know it has great word of mouth, but it totally failed to repel mosquitoes in those controlled studies. But outdoor garlic sprays are highly effective. If you spray concentrated garlic oil, which is available from a variety of sources under a variety of brand names on your backyard, it should stay free of mosquitoes, ticks, and other nasty biting things for 2 to 6 weeks, depending on air temperature and rainfall. And a fan blowing from behind will allow you to sip that Chablis on your deck without being chablitten. Mosquitoes are not strong flyers. Now, research has shown that mosquitoes do prefer certain people over others. So you mosquito magnates out there might also want to check out Insect Shield, a company that sells clothing treated with insect-repelling permethrin, a chemical version of the natural insecticide that's derived from chrysanthemum flowers. This is one of the few instances where I think common sense allows use of a chemical. You don't spray it on the environment, you don't spread it on your skin, and the protection lasts for months or years, even with normal washings. And it's effective against ticks as well as mosquitoes, which DEET is not. Now we get to the really cool stuff, a new way to attack mosquitoes instead of just repelling them. It involves the all-natural larvicide BTI, which I've been recommending to prevent mosquito breeding in standing water for over a decade. One of the many forms of the naturally occurring soil organisms known collectively as BT, BTI prevents mosquito larvae from breeding in water, which is the only place they can breed, and it does so without harming any other form of life. So if you live next to a pond or something similar, you toss a couple of BTI dunks in the water once a month. If an area of your lawn or yard stays wet deep into spring, you scatter BTI granules in the damp areas once a month. Female mosquitoes will still lay their eggs in these wet areas, but no adult mosquitoes will emerge. And my organic counterpart down in Texas, Howard Garrett, the dirt doctor, wants everybody to take that basic idea up a notch. Instead of dumping out all your standing water, Howard says to leave it be. In fact, put out lots more standing water. Fill up your wheelbarrows. Leave out dozens of cat food cans filled with water, buckets, dishes, bowls, and then treat them all with BTI. All of the female mosquitoes in your area will flock to these easy breeding sites and lay their eggs. But no new generations will arise from any of that treated water. The more people who do this and the more water sources they treat, the fewer mosquitoes we'll have come summer. This is an idea that's elegant in its simplicity, and finally a way to fight back against these nasty biters. Well, that sure was an interesting way to fight back against blood-sucking biters now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website, where you can read it over with links to lots more information about mosquito control. Just click the link at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Yikes, my producer is threatening to lure me into a stagnant wheelbarrow if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your tired report, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please tell us where you live in your email. Put the actual subject of your email in the subject line of the email and check voice to see if the information you seek is already waiting for you at our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you can click through to the question of the week. Find the solution to hundreds of garden problems just like yours in our Garden Answers A to Z section. Listen to this show, listen to old shows, download this week's podcast, and follow us on Facebook. Elizabeth Perez Lunes, executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Kevin Love Train Griffin. Rich Banowitz and Sarah Kazar are You Bet Your Garden's internet illuminati. Boo-hoo! Our ace production assistant, Brett Rader, landed an actual job here at WHYY, and so this is his last week with us. But I did buy him a goodbye hoagie, a Sinatra special specifically. Our social media director, Amanda McGrath, does not like hoagies. For this, I blame myself. Where's my hoagie? Asks our sad and hoagie-free editor, Al Banks. Alexis Landis, who proudly produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia, got the exotic veggie hoagie. I bite my tongue on that, but then I couldn't enjoy my hoagie, which is a Sonny's special thin roasted turkey on a perfect South Philly roll with sharp provolone, roasted red peppers, and Italian herbs in olive oil. I'm Mike McGrath, and I'll have you salivating for the same once again next week. As many people sadly learn, trying to grow grass from seed just doesn't work in most climates in the spring. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll discuss whether sod might be the answer to your lack of a lawn to care for, plus your fabulous phone calls. We'll be right back.